You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
There were these prints out in the ball club.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like breaking day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is
size
like
and everything else. They just were too realistic to be
frozen like a tree.
Somebody manufactured
it. The hand was freaking out.
Into the woods.
Female.
They know what creature lives.
Bigfoot Lives, a movie.
Right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
What you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, the party they're gonna have out in the St. John's Wall. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Star.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. If you'd like to join us in our live discussions during the program, just dial in and join us at 347-996-5877. That's 347-996-5877. Just dial in and wait for the moderator to announce your area code and bring you on to the show. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hi, Marco. It's me.
How you doing?
Very, very good. Very good. And Tom's on the road tonight?
Yes, he is. He may call in during the show sometime.
Excellent, excellent. So Pop may join us. You got me and Marco. We got a great show lined up. Go right. And
everything is on. We got some stories you won't believe. Everybody's having all kinds of activity wherever they go. You won't believe
excellent.
It.
Excellent. You got a bunch
Don
of people.
Don Creel and Leonard Brown went out. Let's see. Chris Allen went out a couple weeks ago. And they're on their way back right now. He hasn't dialed in yet, but they're on their way back from the woods. They found some tracks out there where they were at. And then, let's see, Becky Vitello sent me two stories recent. She had to work late tonight, couldn't be on the show, but she wanted to make sure I got the stories, so she sent them to me. And Rob Price is on, and Roger Peterson will be on. And, of course, you'll give us a little update on Arizona. Great
excellent.
Show.
Excellent. Sounds like a really great show. We got a bunch of great people in the chat room, too. We got Bill Green out there. We got Chuck. Chuck's related to Don, who's going to be on the show. And we got everybody's favorite, Connie, back. Connie's back in the chat room, and everybody's happy that she's here. We got Jan. We got Mrs. Sasquatch. We got Mr. Sasquatch from GBRI, Jan's group out there in Georgia. We got Lance Garrison. He's the tree hugger from Connecticut. And we got Leroy Leroy. And everybody knows Leroy's got some great data on the Bigfoot Patterson film and on the Ark and on a door that has a picture of the Lord Jesus. So check out Leroy's site, everybody. And you can get to Leroy's site IAZCRO forum. I don't know it offhand, but we have links to Leroy's site at our forum. And then we got Bruce, the Snake Man from Paris, and Steve, Tom's Gentle Giant, up in the northwest there where Bigfoot lives. Steve's probably some of the stuff, because he's about 7'4" and just a monster, huh, Steve?
This guy's 7'4", my friend that's on there now.
Excuse me?
Hello?
That's right, Alex. Keep on going. Somebody just dialed in, and I got to mute. Don't worry.
All right. Well, that's everybody in the chat room right now. We got a great crowd out there. We got all 12, 13 people in the chat room, and I'm sure more will join in as the show goes on. If I missed anybody, just shout out in the chat room. Now, we got a lot going on tonight, too. We got Chris Allen on his way back from an expedition, and he's going to call in as soon as he gets got Rob.
He's calling in.
Chris is on the line. Hey, Chris.
I hear
you. All right.
You hear me?
I can hear you, Chris. How's it going, and how'd you do today? How'd things go on the trip?
We found a few tracks up here. If my phone's kind of a little iffish, I'm only like 3 minutes from my house. So when I get up here parked on the side of the road, I have way better connection with you. But it was pretty interesting. We saw a few things up here. It was a great place to look in Anstead, West Virginia.
Excellent, excellent. Marco, are we supposed to go to Chris first or Don? Is Don on the line?
Don is on the line right now, ready to go.
Right. Well, we'll let Chris get to his house. Chris, we'll check back with you in a few minutes. Mute yourself out there for a second, please. Don,
I'll be right here.
Leonard, excellent. When Don and Leonard join in, we want to hear about everything that's going on out
there. I've got a bad connection here, Marco.
Well, we can hear you good, Don. Go ahead.
Okay. Make a long story short. Put down some flooring and a couple young men. I showed them a picture on that we found up at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, here a couple of years ago. And this one young man said, oh, my God. And he said his father had came down from Michigan to bow hunt with him last October, and they were out here on Cow Run about 2,000 yards from my house. And this horrific growl and howl drove them out of the woods. It scared them so bad they left the woods. They said the volume was unbelievable. And so Leonard and I went back out, and we checked the place out, and it's an ideal location. Big, wide ravine, probably 30 foot deep, water running through the center of it, rock overhangs. It's just a perfect location. But we didn't find any tracks or any hair or anything at all. So then we went down on the farm where this other young man had heard basically the same kind of a sound, and his wife even heard it from inside the trailer, and she ran out and said, what in the hell is that? And he said, I don't know, but it scared him real bad. And he said, if somebody's down in that ravine trying to scare us, I'm going to start shooting. And said the thing wouldn't shut up. It just kept screaming and growling. And he fired a couple of rounds down in there and hasn't heard anything since. So we checked that out, and we did find some hair, very, very fine hair. Now, there's no follicles, is that what they call it, on the end of the hair?
Sure.
Pardon me?
I said, sure, that's what they call it, the skin on the end, follicle.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm going to go ahead and keep it, but it's extremely fine. It's almost like cat hair or something, you know. So we don't know what it is, but I'm keeping it. But I've been trying for several years to make contact in this particular area and have not been able to. And this one young man was reluctant to talk about it, but finally he opened up because he thinks people will think he's crazy. And I understand that. But anyhow, we're getting things opened up pretty good back here. We found some excellent locations to do our hunts. And basically, that's all I have to say.
Nope. Excellent, Don. Excellent, excellent report. So we got a new area for you right near your home, I guess?
Yeah, like 2,000 yards from my house. It's unbelievable.
That's super.
Yeah.
So go ahead. It amazes me how lucky you and both Jan and Georgia are to have activity right on your property just about. right nearby you. Now, did you have some caves nearby, too? I know you said there was some water.
Oh, yes, there's water running right through the middle of this ravine. It's like 30 foot deep and 50 foot across, and it's very, very long. And there's rock overhangs and brush and everything covering and woods around it. It's just a very pristine area. And this is where the father and son heard this horrible sound that scared them, and they left the woods. Well, in the same area, a couple of days later, another young man and his son was out in there, and it did the same thing, and it scared them so bad they ran back to their truck and left. And nobody's hunted that area since.
That's amazing. I've heard one of those loud yell, howl, growls at what I thought was close range, and I mean, I felt it vibrating through my chest, the rolling of the voice. You know, and the sound I heard, the only thing that comes close is that Bigfoot howl from the old Leonard Nimoy mysteries, Unsolved Mysteries, or not his Search of show. He had another Biggest Mysteries, I think it was called, and the yell in that show, that sounds very much like what I heard. And
this father and son. Hello?
Yep, go ahead, Don.
This father and son, the father from Michigan, both agreed that it could not have been anything human because it was too loud, and a human being wouldn't have that lung capacity or the vocal cords for a sound like that. And said when they got down on the farm, like a half hour later, this young man was still out in the yard, and he was still shaking. He said the sound was unbelievable. So we're really excited about our next time.
Awesome. You're going to get out there with some sound equipment and some cameras, too, or some stealth cams?
Yes. Yes. If we can come buy some of that equipment, we sure will.
Come cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do it.
Well, one of the things...
what happened?
Don, did we lose Don, Marco?
I think we did.
Well, Don,
I'm on a static. A lot of static on the line.
If you can attend to yours, sure will do.
There we go. We're back now. I think Don is fading out. Don, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You're fading out right now. And what we'll do is we'll mute you out. And we should be about ready here for Chris.
I'm right here.
Chris,
can you hear me?
Welcome back, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you,
Chris.
You're
going fine, Chris. You're on fine.
Hey, everybody. Man, it's like I hear so many voices out there and people. Don, I back when Don and I went up there to Pennsylvania, remember the Bigfoot sighting up there on the mountain up there where we went hiking for miles? Great folks there.
Now, where was that in Pennsylvania, Chris?
That was back when, what was his name? The guy that me and Thomas Gardy, Youngblood, a bunch of us went up there looking for the videotape that we actually, somebody called in with a videotape. They had that was believed to have been a Bigfoot. We went up there and searched somewhere way high up on that mountain. That was back when I try to stay in shape. I go hiking all the time. And but I'll tell you what, Tom Scardi, that guy can out hike about anybody. He puts about two strides per one stride on the average man.
That's pretty good. He's the Italian stallion. So what do you got going on now in West Virginia?
We just now got in. In fact, we're sitting in the Jeep right now in the driveway. We just got back from Anstead, where we went up there and found a really great spot along a river up there. It was actually a creek. It's called Turkey Creek. And we followed this trail several miles and looked for tracks. But we found a few things, but nothing, you know, we're going to go back. The only reason we left the woods is because with the show tonight, I didn't think I'd have radio reception up there. And we came back, but now I have a girl. Did she call in? A girl by the name of Erica? Is she on the line? Or
I don't have anybody else on the line, Chris.
Oh, well, she was supposed to call down. I gave her the access number. She's in North Carolina. We went camping over the weekend, and she was she and my son was in one tent. Carrie and I and our children were in another tent, and that night we all heard, especially Erica and my son, they're the ones that brought it to our attention, about the rock beating, which was on the road just right up in front of us, no more than 100, at the most 100 yards. You could hear it just beating. It's like a bang, bang, bang. Then it would stop. Complete silence.
Like a rock clicking, a rock clicking, or louder than a clicking?
It actually sounded just like if you take about a 10-pound rock and just hit the road three times, an asphalt road or something. It actually sounded like it was more of a solid, you know, I know what the road sounds like. And it actually sounded like it was hitting the road with a rock. And then all that night, which was a very rainy night, you could hear something just walking all around the tents out there. And I'm not saying there was deer or whatever, but the next day we went out there and looked, and there's a lot of, like, 7-foot-tall branches that were snapped off of saplings. Just a lot of inclination that there was something there, but there was no solid. I looked all around, and I didn't see any solid tracks in the grassy areas where we were camping at. You know, if we would have went outside from that, possibly would have seen that. This is the place that I told the world, where I saw my son and I were first at, where we saw the first three Gigantopithecus blackies that were removing the bark from the trees, and they're either eating the bark or, as Tom said, they're probably eating the grubs under the bark. This is just less than probably a mile from that exact location, probably about a half mile from that same location where we heard the rock sounds, hitting sounds.
How long ago was that original sighting with you and your son?
I'd have to say 16 years ago.
Okay. Now, has there been any activity in between that you know of? I mean...
Oh, yeah. Well, there's been so much activity in this area. The wintertime when there's, you know, it gets quite a bit of snow in this area. Virgin tracks. I mean, if you were to find any tracks in the snow, it would be there. Now, I've dove this lake. I've walked across the lake in the wintertime. I spent a lot of time camping here. My whole family's been camping there for over 100 years. Before the lake was even there in Anthony Creek. And this is a great hunting ground. There's a lot of deer, and you'll find a lot of deer mutilated carcasses out there where they have just been, it looks like they were hit by a 50-pound rock and exploded or something. There's a lot of activity in this area. If you go out that lake anytime, you'll find tracks where something has walked across, you know, two-legged walk across the lake in many locations. I could take anybody that wants to dive in this lake up there. It's a shallow lake, and you'll find many of the 8-foot bodies of water, 6 and 8 foot. You'll find tracks walking all the way across this lake, and a huge stride. No human can make a stride like that. I have a pair of Mari's dive fins. These are $150 dive fins. I could put my whole foot inside the mud tracks, where it's definitely been a good sized track. Of course, you know, a several foot thick muddy bottom. It's going to soak in a lot of the track. If you have a 12-inch shoe, it's going to look like it's a 15-inch shoe. But if you had a 15-inch shoe, it's going to look like a 20-inch shoe. But these are really large tracks crossing this lake at any given point. And we've camped there, my wife and I have camped there in two blizzards, one at 30 blow and one at 20 blow in a tent, just trying to find this. They are very active in this area year-round, especially in the more remote time of the year. But it was a very rainy weekend. We had a torrential downpours. We didn't really get to get out as much as we hoped that we would. In fact, we hiked the 5 miles around the lake and got caught in a huge downpour while we were doing that, looking for evidence. It's really kind of hard to find evidence when you're right in the middle of a downpour, but it was there. It was at our campsite that the second night that we were there, and there was four adults that were in there that actually can verify the exact rock beating sounds. I've heard this, you know, many times in my life. I spend lots of hours, for those that don't know me out there that hear this program, I have 8 world top 10 hit songs, so I have traveled every state in the United States in search of this with my tour, with my music, or with my truck driving career. I find myself in very remote places across the United States looking for this exact animal, this creature. I spent countless hours. I've heard this rock sound many times in my life. I know the rock sound, and it's the same three bang, bang, bang type of sound I've heard countless times. as many people have heard, you know, there's very few animals that could bang rocks together out there. I mean, of course, we all know an otter can, but we're in the middle of West Virginia in the mountains. There are no otters in this area that's going to be out there banging rocks on a road, especially as heavy a rock as sound as this was.
Wow, that's pretty wild. Now, the broken branches that you saw, did you get any pictures?
Actually, we do. We have several photos of these. They're twisted branches. You'll find little sapling-sized trees that the branches are not just broke over like how, you know, a storm or something can. They'll get twisted where it looks like something just reached up about 7 foot and twisted a branch right over, laid it right down.
And you know, you wonder what... Go ahead.
From the same area, we have all kinds of photographs of what appears to be footprints in the leaf. Now, a leaf track, I've learned a lot from Tom on some of the expeditions he's taken me on where you real gently can remove the leaf and find the Java Bobby. He's shown me that before. If you real gently move the leaves, sometimes you'll find an impression in the soft areas out there. We found all kinds. We've actually photographed our foot on side of so many footprints. Nothing extraordinarily really clear because the ground is so hard. But there are so many tracks that you could find, and the strides of the tracks are, you know, if I would jump from 1 foot to, you know, as far as I can out, that's about what the strides were. I don't know if you'd say 60-inch strides. They're just a good stride. And my mom has even noticed this out there. If you go back to our family history of camping out there, before anybody ever heard of the Patterson video, there have been, through my family camping in this area, there's been so many countless stories that have been told from this exact area of things that have been seen. And through all the years, my entire life of camping in this area, all the stories that I've gotten to hear, you know, if I were a non-believer and I didn't believe anybody had anything to say until that one night when I actually seen the three ripping apart the trees, the two were doing it. When the third one stepped out, it was, I'd say, about at least 12 foot tall, appeared to be 12 foot tall. When it stepped out of the woods, the two stepped in. My son and I ran back to our campsite, which was almost a mile away, and we ran nonstop at nighttime as fast as we could. I mean, that's what got me full speed looking for this, because I know it's there. I've seen it. I've seen six of them in my lifetime, but I can't swear, you know, my hand to God that I saw six. I saw a silhouette or something that appeared that might be, but those three that I saw that night were so clear. I saw them plain as day and on a very bright lit moon night, so... If you ever stood outside on a bright lit moon night in a field right on side of a lake, you know, you could definitely read a newspaper. It's so bright. It was bright enough to tell what we saw was really tall, black. Its arms were as long as its body nearly. They came down very close below the calf area of your leg. So if you were, say, 10 foot tall and you have an arm spread that's nearly as long as you, that's a great reach right there. You're talking at least a 16, 17 foot reach in the air if you're 10 foot tall.
That, you know, that's a long arm. You know, they say the Patterson video has a creature with extra long arms, but if you look at it, I don't really think his arms hang any longer down his side than, say, mine do, or a basketball player with a little extra long arms would.
You know, that video, I've watched that video countless times, and if I had to analyze what I saw with that, that's more of a Gigantopithecus. Now, what I'm referring to is a Blackie. It's the tallest of the Bigfoot. It's the largest creature in the Bigfoot. These were actually tall, broad-chested, but they had really long, skinny-ish legs, not as stocky as the Pithecus, the one that's a rust color. That's a Gigantopithecus. It's kind of like a rustish brown, and it comes in several different colors, just like humans have different hair colors, but the majority of those are not jet black.
Right. Right.
Now, a lot of this is research that's been, you know, that I've dug back into, and, you know, speaking with Jane Goodall and other people throughout the years, there's, if I'm not mistaken, there are five different species of a Bigfoot. There are two of them that I have seen, that I know of, that I have seen, the Gigantopithecus and Gigantopithecus Blackie. In this area that we're talking about, or the Gigantopithecus Blackies, the really tall ones.
Now, I can't let that go, and it sounds really interesting, too. What are the other three types?
I don't know. We always hear the one down in Florida, like the areas down there, the skunk ape. And when I was in Cedars of Lebanon, Tennessee, now many times this has happened to me, the smaller ones that I would appear that they were the smaller ones out there, they're all great rock throwers. But we were sitting around a homemade fire ring that we made out in the forest our own self, and we had rocks that whizzed by our head so fast. I mean, if you take a slingshot and just whiz a rock right past your head, it almost goes by the velocity of what a bullet sounds like. Makes that sound just like that. And exploded in the tree inside of me. And I actually seen the rock hit the tree with, you know, the lights that we had out there, the lanterns that were out there. And instinct reaction, I jumped and yelled, everybody hit the ground. We hit the ground, I'm yelling, get in the Jeep, because I knew exactly what was happening. I don't know how I knew what was happening, but I assumed I knew what was happening. Sure enough, another rock went right by my Jeep, and we got in the Jeep, and we got out of there because there was just so many rocks. I know of three rocks that were thrown before we actually got in the Jeep within a distance of 6 feet from the Jeep. We got in the Jeep and got out of there as quickly as we could. We came back a little bit later to get our flashlights and things together to look around, but for that brief moment, they were throwing rocks very accurately, and if a rock like that would crack in your head, it would be a bad day for anybody that got in the head that hard of the rock.
Well, we had a rock throwing incident last year, one of our trips to the Young area that, and that rock, I saw it too, Chris. It came flying by. It hit a bush next to us and kept going. The next day we couldn't find it. We were looking close. It probably kept going because it was humming.
Yeah, that's happened to me several times. And the largest rock I've actually had thrown at me was in a place called Campbell's Creek, just outside of Charleston, West Virginia. And we do a lot of four-wheeling up there. And I was going by. Now, you can actually hit a rock with your wheel, and it can catapult that rock out, just like if you snap an ice cube out of your fingers. But I dare to doubt a rock could hit a tree as hard as what this one did. It was late in the evening. It was still slightly daylight. And I thought I had saw something earlier when I passed by this one given point by a stream. And I went back through the spot shortly after that to get out of there. It was just, we had to get somewhere, and we were leaving back out of there. And all of a sudden, a rock about the size of, I guess what, a Nerf football would be, it slammed the tree right outside of me. And it was almost as if somebody would take a ball bat and just beat a tree right outside of your head, how the velocity sounded. My hair stood straight up, and of course, I didn't stick around to find out what just threw a rock that hard and hit a tree behind me. And at the same time, my wife and I, when we camped at the Blizzard at Sherwood Lake in Monongahela National Forest, several beatings and several incidents we've heard up there. Now, the loudest I've ever heard, as Don was talking about the noise that these things can project, when these things are right up at your campsite and they scream, it's my wife doesn't wake up for nothing when she's in a deep sleep, especially after hiking half a day for many, many miles. And at this place, the cold temperature will allow you to sleep really solidly in a tent. Well, we heard this thing beating, and it wasn't just like a three-beat rock, like, you know, trying to signal. This is like if you'd see a silverback gorilla beating its chest, and you stick a microphone right on that chest and put it through a 7-foot-tall Marshall amplifier and crank that thing up, I'm telling you what, this was so loud. An hour before we heard the beating, I had a Rottweiler, I had a Skipper Key, and a Pit Bull that went with us on this camping trip. They single-filedly jumped in back of a toolbox, a big toolbox like what you'd have in back of a pickup truck. They got in that pickup type of toolbox. It knocked them out. I didn't know what scared my dogs to death. They were so scared. And about an hour later, we heard this beating right outside of our tent. We heard a few moments later across the lake a signaling, and we heard a signaling, and it was almost like in a triangle area that probably scattered maybe a mile in diameter of each point of contact, A, B, and C, if it were a triangle. I'd say it was probably close to a mile because there was a lake that was in the middle. If you separate the distance of land, it was a good, you know, travel. And it was so loud you could hear it across the lake almost as clear as you could on the side of the lake by our campsite.
Was the sound coming from the same area, or was it coming from two different areas? Were they communicating with each other?
Yes, they were. There's three areas. It was a triangle, A, B, and C. If you take it as a being one pinnacle and the other two points, they were coming
from the middle of the lake? And you in the middle on the lake?
We were out on the side of the lake camping, and there was one right outside of us. Now, I know for all my life of camping there what your echo will sound like. If you said hello, you will hear a hello, hello, hello. This was not a beat and an echo from the beat. This was moments later, you'd hear another very similar beat, and it was not the echo. And then from another given point, you'd hear another beat from something. Almost like if it were trying to, almost like if they were trying to herd a deer or something into one area.
Well, Chris, I really want to thank you for being on the show tonight. Thanks for coming on. We got to have you on more often, for God's sakes. keep on trucking away. Man, you've got a lot of information to share with us, and we're really happy that you've done that. We've got a list full of guests still to go yet.
And by the way, I wanted to mention something to you while I'm on here.
Sure.
We may be signing on right now with the manager for Marshall Tucker, Mr. Rainey, which he knows me from before when I was at the position to be the lead singer in the Marshall Tucker Band. This guy is a phenomenal guy out in Beverly Hills, and right now we may be going under new management, which will keep me quite busy throughout the United States, because my old buddies, the Marshall Tucker Band, they're booked up all the way to the end of the year from the management company side. And
wow.
So if we get this chance to travel out more on our music, I might be able to find myself back on all 48 again and hitting the most remote areas I can in search of this. But this time I might be able to have the band out with me.
Well, that'd be great. Well, we're going to keep in touch with you, Chris. And if anything comes up, give me a call. So we can get you back on and share your encounters.
I'll do that. And in the meantime, if Alex ever makes it up here from out there in Arizona, or Don, you make it over in this area in Charleston, and you guys want to get out there and come up there with me to Sherwood Lake, some week can come out there and we'll get out there. And I want to show you some of these locations out there, because it is one of the hottest spots on the East Coast that I know of.
That's pretty good. We certainly will. And if you're out in any of our areas, we're going to come and see you.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. You have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. And if you want, I'll mute you out and you can listen to the rest of the show. Or you're probably sitting in a Jeep still, aren't you?
Yeah, but I'll keep it on speakerphone and everybody here, because we got a carload listening.
Okay. Well, appreciate you coming on, and thank you much, and good luck.
Thank you. Y'all have a good night.
Hey, Chris, keep in touch. Who we got next, Marco?
Well, Rob Price. Rob is on here and ready to go. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Marco.
Blood.
Alex.
Hey, how's it going, young blood? How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing great. I've been keeping myself real busy. Right now, me and Chuck's planning on an expedition for not this weekend, but the weekend after this one is coming up. We're going to go check out a watershed that spans pretty much the entire length of the state of Alabama and Georgia, right there on that side of the line. We'll check that out and see what's going on over there. Chuck's been over there once before and has found footprints and real conducive to what we're looking for.
We got some interference. I think maybe Chris is moving into the house there.
Oh, I hear a lot of numbers. Is that
Well, somebody else is dialing next to him. They're in the Jeep.
Well, go ahead, Rob. We can hear you.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's pretty much the upcoming plan. Man, Chuck's planning that expedition for the week after next. And beyond that, I think we're going to go try the Tallapoosa Watershed in the near future, right after that event. So,
I told him to get in touch with you, so I'm glad he did and glad you're up for it. So how long are you going to do that for?
I think we're going to spend about 5 days out there because of Chuck's work schedule and just, typical stuff, real world stuff. You got to get back to work, and you can't get off in about 5 days. So that's what we're going to do on that expedition. We're hoping that the expedition following that will be, a little longer, have some vacation time coming up. And after that, we're going to also plan a trip back up to West Virginia sometime.
Super. So you will be seeing Chris probably in the near future.
Probably so.
Excellent. I'm sure Chris will be happy to hear that. And now, what is it that brought Chuck to this location? What kind of sightings is he getting from the location? Is it sound reports? Is it visual sightings? Is it both? Footprints? What is it?
It's a combination of all of the above, and what happened was that he received a couple of phone calls from different people, and he went out there and checked it out, and it checks out. He found actual footprints. He got out there and spent some time and got some sound feedback one night, but he didn't have an ample amount of time to spend there at that particular juncture. He just went out there to check it out, you know, get a preliminary on the place to make sure it was something that it was worth the, you know, investment of time to go out there and spend time checking it out. Which now that he's done that, we're going to go out there and actually invest the time now into researching the area.
Wow. And bringing cameras, going to cast some prints. You seen in all of the above, do some wood knocking, some whooping?
Oh, yes, exactly. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go do what we do best.
Super. Super.
Now, like I said, I really don't have a lot of detailed information on that coming up one yet because, like I said, me and Chuck's only talked a couple times over the phone for a few minutes here and a few minutes there about it right now.
Well, Chuck's in the chat room tonight, so he probably appreciates you keeping it on the QT a little bit anyways. We gave him a shout-out earlier in the show, and, of course, that was Dawn on. But excellent, excellent. So good to hear from you. And I know Marco's trying to keep things on schedule here, and we went a little long with Chris. So, Marco, who do we have next?
Well, it's good old Roger Peterson, RPM, buddy. Let me bring him on.
RPM, RPM, RPM. Oh,
well,
we're all here,
Alex,
though.
Alex, traveling around now. He's been, my God, did he talk to you?
I haven't talked to him in a couple of days.
Well, I talked to him today, and he's heading out for New York and Minnesota tomorrow. He's he's putting the miles on that plane. He's supposed to be back Saturday, so it ought to be a pretty interesting comeback. He's got a big surprise for everybody next week and next week's show, and I'm telling you, it's going to knock your socks off. I can't tell you what it is, but it's a photograph, and it's unbelievable. It's one of a kind.
I believe it's probably the photograph we heard of last week or the week before on the show or both, so we're finally going to get to see it, maybe. That's pretty good. So, do we got Roger?
Are
hey.
You there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Roger, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing all right. I haven't been able to go out since about the 17th because I had an accident and I shattered a disc in my neck. And that wasn't too good.
Uh-huh. Was that C5 and C6?
Yep. Yep.
I read the email.
Oh man, I'll tell you what, it's been playing havoc with me, but I'll tell you, I'm not going to be down for long. You know, I get that surgery done, I'll be back out there again.
Well, that's what I hear. As soon as you have it done, you're as good as new. That's what Big Steve had done out there in Kentucky, and
yeah.
That's what he had done just recently. So we want you to be better. Now, what do you got going on? Because we know you had some activity down there before this happened, right?
Absolutely. The last time I was able to be out was on the 17th of this month. And my groups that I've been watching have just about doubled in size. I mean, there's definitely, like Tom said last show I was on, that these weather changes are really affecting the movements of these creatures. And I had 12 of them that were out at Painted Rock, and I've got 20 now. And
wow.
Down in the Gillespie area, they went from 7 to 15.
Wow.
Yeah, I've had a lot of vocalizations and rocks about the size of a softball being thrown at me. A lot of footprints, you know, because They seem to travel a lot from I've been studying from Yuma up to about the rural area up there close to Black Canyon, and they seem to follow that waterway very, very frequently. That is one of their main trails, you know, and there any given time you can go and you find footprints that are no more than a day old. And that's also the area where I had that one creature that stalked me when I was stalking him.
Now, they would almost have to follow the river down there, right?
Get too
far from the river and you're in desert, right?
Absolutely. I mean, nothing but desert. And they stay pretty close to the river's edge. I mean, any given point, they're pretty much within about a mile or mile and a half of the river, is as far as I've been tracking them out away from it. But you know, at night they seem to travel a lot quicker and further away. But in that area, you know, it's pretty tedious. You know, there's a lot of canyons and things like that you got to go through, and it's advisable if you can to have a four-wheel drive. Now me, I just got my old pickup, but you know, it seems to get me where I need to go.
I don't have the four-wheel drive either, and it has got me in trouble a couple of times, but mostly I can get almost everywhere they can get, you know, unless we're doing something extreme. Unfortunately, it don't take much for some of these areas to go from fine to extreme real quick, and I found that out in February. But I got to get down there with you, Roger. We got to get together. I got to check it out with you. So as soon as you get better, you got to let me know. And we'll get you up. If you want to come with us up here, you know, that would be an honor. We'll take you out in the areas we go up here. They're beautiful.
Oh, that'd be great.
We got to get you out with us more often because, you know.
Yeah.
Something like the Arizona.
You know, I'm looking forward to that, to finally meet you guys face to face, you know. Because, I mean, you know, I've been ever since my first encounter back in 87 when I had to shoot that creature. I mean, I hated to, but I had no choice, you know. I had four other guys there that were depending on me, and I was the only one with a gun, you know. And when that thing attacked, we had no choice.
Now tell us, and you know, I love that story. It's, you know, I know it gets you upset. But
yeah.
Go back a little bit so people that haven't heard.
We don't got enough time, my buddy. Alex, we're running out of time.
Well, we can see that someday. I enjoy coming on the show and talking with y'all, and I can definitely come back and do that sometime. But
okay.
I gotta say, I do have a friend now that I'm emailing back and forth. The name of Luther Redwine, and he lived down in the Tonopah area just north, you know,
of Helia.
He was just north of
Hello?
Y'all still there?
Go ahead there, Roger.
Anyway, this guy had the same encounter where these creatures actually came in his camp. And there was three of them that come down in the camp, and his dog that usually stayed outside, man, wanted in the inside that camper bad, you know. And he relayed his story to me about it, and he seems like a good man, you know. And now he's up back east somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, but I hope to hear more from him.
Well, Roger, I appreciate you coming on, my friend. Got to have you on some more. Once you get your, once we get all of us old guys, got to get our medical problems done. So once we get them all done here, we'll be back out there and be really anxious to hear from you.
Oh, you bet! I'll be back out quick as I can.
Well, I'll be keeping in touch.
All right.
Take care. God bless. And a pleasure to have you on again, Roger.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk with y'all.
Take care now. I'm going to mute you out, and you can listen to the rest of your show if you like.
All right.
Here we go. Well, everybody, I had an email from Becky Botello. She couldn't be on tonight because she works late, and she has to listen to the archive.
But she sent me some stories in an email, and I have to read them to you. I mean, they're absolutely phenomenal. One is a visual encounter that she had, and I'd like to go through that, and I'm gonna read it from her email. Becky says to tell everyone that she says hi and that she misses everyone a lot. Becky recently reconnected with a girlfriend over a mutual friend's death. When they decided that Becky would go to visit her at her hometown known as Boone Lake on Taft's Island, she announced that her husband and her were purchasing a very large treed lot on the outskirts of the town called Orting. Now, this lot's a part of a very huge, densely forested area at the highest altitude of this town. It almost appears to be even with a lower part of Mount Rainier visibly appearing bigger than life on the right side of this lot. To the left, you can also see Mount Baker, very picturesque. The only thing separating this lot from the mountain is what appears to be only a couple of miles of thick forestation and a large river known as the Carbon River, which is about 200 feet, and immediately below the cliff that the lot sits on. At this point, this lot and a vast amount of land surrounding have been purchased by investors and have called this special area the safe zone. And it's due to the possibility that Mount Rainier should erupt. Now, when her friend Jennifer and Becky arrived to this area, Jennifer's husband had already arrived with the man responsible for selling these lots. Becky stood on the cliff and surveyed all her eyes could take in, and it was beautiful, and you could hear the rushing river below. They all piled into the real estate man's crew cab truck, and he proceeded to drive through the winding paved road, which was all that's there right now, separating the untouched lots. They came around a curve, and two men got out of the vehicle to discuss plans that were in place for the area. Now, Jennifer and Becky got out and decided to walk by themselves. And once they walked maybe about 150 yards, they started to smell something. Now, they walked into the woods, and once about 60 feet in, they found a marshy area with skunk cabbage everywhere. Now, Jennifer suddenly noticed that there was a river rock from the river below that had been carried up some 200 feet and was deposited near this patch of skunk cabbage that they found. Jennifer believes in that creature. She's seen it. And after finding tree twists nearby, was convinced, along with Becky, that they might have some company with them. Now, there's nothing but forest as far as the eye can see. Plenty of deer, elk, and the river below, along with a lot of other wildlife. And as they stood there looking over the river rock and the tree twists and pulled down branches of huge trees, Jennifer saw some movement. And she said she just saw something move behind a tree that wasn't more than 45 feet away. Becky decided that since they were off by themselves, it was probably time to get a little closer to the guys. So they all got back into the truck and drove just past to where they were downhill about 150 feet and stopped. Now, the men were looking at some markers and talking about a rough trail that was going to be put in. And as they were talking, Becky saw a movement across from her in the tree line, which at that location was about 200 yards away. Becky started looking to see what she saw move, thinking maybe it was an elk. She kept her eyes locked onto the tree where she saw the movement, and then as she watched, an upright standing creature stepped from behind the tree that she was looking at. Becky saw a tall shadow move to the tree next in line to it, and she kept watching, thinking, what the hell? Am I seeing another one? And she kept staring and watching as this thing looked around the tree to peek at him, and then back behind the tree it was standing behind, as if to hide out of sight. It then stepped for the third time to the next tree to hide behind it, and then began to the fourth tree. And then it peeked around the tree to look at them for a moment, and then she saw it move from the fourth tree, turning around behind it, and then it disappeared into the forest. Now, Becky was flabbergasted again that she had witnessed another creature. It was upright, dark brown, and very tall. Jennifer had seen her staring at something but kept poking Becky, asking her what she was looking at. Of course, Becky was too fixed on it to answer her at the moment it happened. And Jennifer said she knew Becky had seen something, but Becky knew that she had seen, and she's going to go back up there on that property this Sunday with her friend again, only this time with a camera. Now, Becky's excited and hoping that maybe she'll see another creature and have her camera to prove it this time. So there's more to follow, folks, and we'll keep in touch with Becky to do that. The second story that Becky had was a photo story. Becky Vitello met a woman who shared an incredible untouched original photo that she wanted to show her. After she realized that Becky had seen the creature before, and she believed, there's a town called Mossy Rock in eastern Washington, and it's not a large town, and it's lots of forest around there. And the lady said that she was at her father's cabin there, and her and her brothers would go out there to fish. Now, she told Becky of many instances where creatures would come up to the cabin at night and lean on the cabin walls and sometimes bang on them. The lady's father and brother have seen them a few times and asleep there a lot with a shotgun in their beds with them, and at times I guess they probably are afraid. Kimberly, the lady's name, said she came out of the cabin about a year ago, and a creature stepped out of the forest onto the road in front of the cabin that they were staying at, and they just stood there and looked at her. She said she was so scared that she couldn't move, and she wondered if it was going to attack her or not. But it just stood there for about 5 minutes and then walked into the woods. She said she might agree to take Becky there, so I guess this story might be continued later on as well. However, the story Kimberly told Becky about the photo surrounds the story of the lady's ex-husband, the father of the kids, father of her kids, buying a house at the foot of Mount St. Helens in a gated community. This is the gated community I'm talking about. She swore to secrecy, so she will not take Becky there to tell her where it is. Now, from what Becky saw in the photo, this gated fenced community was up on a ridge, and his house is on the corner of this community. He apparently walked down about 100 feet or so to take the picture of his house. So in the picture, the house is up on the right corner, and because he was downhill from it on a dirt road, there's nothing but trees and forests surrounding these houses. He had the picture processed and suddenly realized that not more than 50 feet away, there were two creatures in the picture, one leaning on into the other, looking into the camera. You could see their eyes, a brow ridge, their jawline, and the mouth and nose, all their facial features, and it was amazing. You can see the conical heads, their shoulders and bodies, standing behind two small trees. Now, Becky said she could see it clearly as day in the picture. Kimberly, the lady, said she had the picture blown up to poster size, but it scared her, and she was experiencing a lot of time not sleeping, nightmares about it, so she tore the poster size picture up. Becky asked her if she had let her have a duplicate and that Becky would pay for it, and she proceeded to tell her that her ex-husband had sworn to her to secrecy because he had many of them and was convinced that there's families out there, and families of Bigfoot out there, and he didn't want to disturb him. He told him that he didn't want people showing up there with guns, shooting them, or running them off. Now, Kimberly adamantly stressed the fact that she hides the picture and never shows it to anyone. And because of this, she shares the same protective conviction that her ex-husband does. She'll never give anyone a duplicate or allow anyone else to view the photo or divulge a location in this area. Becky's thinking that if someone did a Google Earth on Mount St. Helens around the base, that it might possibly locate that area. The lady is adamant on conveying to Becky that there are families out there, so maybe someone knows this gated community there or could locate it somehow. Becky said she considers herself very fortunate indeed and blessed to have seen this. And that's what Becky gave us. Alex, are you there, my friend?
I sure am, Marco. Great job. Great job. Great stories by Becky.
Yeah, we got about 4 minutes. So
excellent.
Give us a little update on yours.
Well, first off, you know what she was saying about the creatures stepping behind the trees? That's exactly what I saw when I was on the Apache Res and Steve. Creature popping out behind the trees, going from tree to tree. Exactly like she said. She was struggling a little bit to describe it, but I could picture exactly what she was trying to describe because I've seen exactly that. Davo's in the chat room, and we also got Bob out there. Connie's chatting away. In Arizona, it's hopping. We got stuff going on everywhere. We got a new member out in the Chino Valley area who was going to be up in Seligman last week. He's checking out the Western Seligman sighting that we had earlier in the winter. We got Mitch over in near Young and his MogionMonster.com website, and you can get to it through the AZCRO forum. He has a couple of new videos on the bedding areas that he's found. And, you know, one of the things we've noticed up in these areas is there's always a lot of bedding areas, and, you know, that makes sense. He seems to have found the location where the pod we've been following for a couple of years seems to be bedding down at least sometimes, you know. So he's hot on that trail, and he's got two videos that show him and, I assume, his son or his brother searching the area. Usually his grandson's with him, too, so I'm not sure. He may be in the video. We didn't want to leave him out. Beyond that, we got everything going on down there that Roger told us about. So we got activity in the southwest. We got activity in the central. We got activity up in the northwest. And, of course, I've been getting reports from Sholo from two different, actually three different locations in the Sholo-Heber area. And AK I talked to this week, he hasn't been able to get out into the area where the sighting came from a few weeks ago before he had his knee surgery. He actually had knee surgery, Marco, not hip surgery. But so we got activity in the Apache Res. We got activity in the White Mountains beyond the Apache Res that Mitch was mentioning before, just recently before his last
we're down to one or less than a minute, buddy.
Okay.
We need to say goodbye to everybody, and next week, the big surprise.
Well, next week, next week, Tom has the big surprise of the photo or video, and, of course, probably some more news on the TV show. We got everybody in the chat room we wanted to say goodnight to, Lance, Jan, the Sasquatch team from GBRI, and everybody else. Thanks for joining in. Kudos and salutations to everyone.
Good night, everybody.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries, find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
There were these prints up in Ball Club.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized there was something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like break in day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is too light.
And everything else, they just were too realistic.
And they're
to be
frozen like a tree.
Somebody turned
our manufactured
this.
The hand
and
was freaking out.
Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives.
Bigfoot lives.
Just a
movie.
Right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests, Java Bob and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster myths and mysteries, legend, tales and facts. What brought them together? Reason for the fact.